Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the Redmen TV podcast, all things Liverpool Football Club. In discussion-based form between me and Mr. Chris Pajak. In the interest of people who haven't been friends with us for 15 years, I thought we'd just delve straight into the Liverpool stuff.
Okay, cool.
Before we meander.
Okay, so I wanted to do an hour of this.
Genie Wijnaldum.
Yeah, but we won't.
Shame.
Not recorded, anyway.
After. I love that.
Sweet, stay tuned.
That's not like pudding, is it?
So first question to kick us off comes from Kevin Crowley at Kevin Crowley 90 on Twitter. Says £50 million and you can only pick one. Would you choose buying Sanchez or moving to Kirby?
Oh!
Is it an R though?
Yeah!
Is it though?
Yeah!
And now, I get the only way I can say this isn't the easiest question ever. Because just to clarify, the answer is moving to Kirby.
I disagree.
You disagree?
Yeah.
Is the reasoning because if we bought Sanchez, we could win the title and then we'd have loads of money?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Brilliant. There we go, Sad.
Because you're looking at the history, you're looking at the future of the football club, aren't you? And I think that that's massively important.
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool has to keep moving forward. So Kirby is such a good thing for us.
Yeah.
But ultimately, if you can expedite the process of becoming a big club again in Europe, then Sanchez does that.
Yeah.
And then we get loads of money from Champions League. And then, you know what, a year or two down the line, you've got 50 million quid to start the Kirby thing. Sounds. I'll have both.
Well, that's the beauty of this question is that look, we're not going to be buying Alexis Sanchez. I don't see that.
And 50 million to steal.
50 million would be a good. When you consider.
It's only like three and a bit abs.
It's more than three.
It's three and a third ibs.
Three and a third ibs.
Yeah.
Then that's a
50. He was 15 million, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's a
15, 30, 45 plus another five done.
Sounds. Okay, I can get behind that. The thing about the 50 million thing, and like I say, I don't see that we will sign Alexis Sanchez. I don't see that Arsenal would sell him to us one way or the other. But
we can dream.
We can dream, exactly. As it's James Pearce's job to poo-poo transfers. That's not what we're here to do. We're
it's
here to make people smile.
Transfers, isn't
I know, I talked about it the other week. He thinks it's hilarious. Like,
what? Crushing people's dreams is hilarious.
Telling the truth.
If we had guests on this podcast, Paul, I'd tell him what I think of him.
What do you think of him?
That he shouldn't really poo-poo transfers. Let us dream.
Yeah.
Dreaming's not something that's just done when you're asleep, Paul.
Exactly.
You should know this better than anyone.
Sometimes you've got to wake up, lad. So I thought we were going to do. Yeah, it's fine. In jokes abound. Anyway, yeah, the thing for me is I would love to see us go out this summer and spend £50 million on someone amazing. And he would fit the bill. You know, he's agitating at Arsenal. There's a good chance that he won't want to move.
Mm.
There's a better chance Arsenal won't sell him, but whatever. Go out and get someone who totally and utterly fits what you do, someone who works really, really hard, loads of pace, loads of ability.
Yeah.
We would be an infinite. If you, even just in the very simple sense, if you swapped him for Roberto Firmino, and I really like Firmino, just in our first 11 now, I think we'd be, if not top of the league,
This is the thing with him, isn't it? I mean, something that Arsenal have done really well all season long is they beat teams that they should be beating.
Yeah.
And it's the one thing that you know as a Liverpool fan that we struggle with. And Alexis Sanchez is a big part of that because we know when Suarez was at Liverpool, it's great to have a flat track bully in your side.
Yeah.
And look, you look at that mini table and we've got 19 points from the top six mini table. Arsenal are on like 5 or 6 points.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're ahead of us in the league, rightfully. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, right now they're not, are they? Because they've got a game in hand and whatever. But, you know, there's a 13, 14 point swing there against the lower teams. And Sanchez gets you those points
yeah.
and puts us around about Chelsea in my eyes.
No, I completely agree with that. The good thing is, as I say, is that theoretically, and there'll be people rolling their eyes and whatever, and I don't give a fuck, to be honest, that we should be able to do both. You know, and the people, there's people who will think we won't, and maybe we won't, and I don't know, we'll know in 6 months' time, won't we? But I think that the Kirby thing is over here. I mean, this is what it boils down to. If FFP is an actual thing still, you can spend that money on Kirby. Doesn't affect you. It's whether the owners are prepared to put a budget up and not have that budget be impacted. If they decide to invest that money in the infrastructure of the club, then FFP can't stop you doing that. You're entirely allowed to do that. Look,
if FSG are saying there's £50 million to spend Jurgen Klopp, where do you want to spend it? And he chooses Kirby, then I would be a little bit annoyed, to be perfectly honest with you. But if there's the transfer kitty and the £50 million is completely separate,
Yeah. Brilliant,
best move for Liverpool Football Club that you can do.
Yeah.
And you're right, the FFP has to play into it. It is still a thing, and you are spot on. But I'd be gutted, and I would definitely fall into the FSG out camp if it was one or the other.
Yeah.
But it can't be. It just can't be.
Yeah, no. I think what it boils down to, it would be nice to see us, because I'm all in on the buying lads who are like 21, 22, who are ready to make that big, breaking the big step up, because that's where Liverpool have historically had the best success in the transfer market. We've had some failures too, but you know, the biggest players that we've had in recent years, and just the two, just name Suarez and Torres as the examples, that the guys who were the most exciting players that we've bought in recent memory, the
guys that went on to be world class,
exactly, or became it at us as well. I'm in on that, but it would be nice for us to go and buy someone who was right in the prime and spend the big bucks, and considering, like, that would obviously absolutely smash our transfer record by a good £15 million, say. But when you consider that with the money we've brought in selling players, exactly, it would be nice. Here's the thing: it would be nice for us to not worry about selling value for like one player a season or one player every two seasons. If it makes a big difference, I think there's some more transfer talk in some questions. We're going to be answering some real questions a bit later on, and there is some transfer stuff in there. So stay tuned for that. Topic I wanted to kind of come on to, obviously, let's get back to Liverpool current in the here and now. Done a lot of stuff on the Arsenal game, and those who want to watch a full in-depth analysis of that, of course, can listen to and watch the Final Word show on the RedmenTV.com. You had the chance to speak to Robbie and Troops of Arsenal Fan TV, and now memes, Troops TV and Twitter viral video fame. I'm sure you could relate.
Yeah, we had a good laugh at some of the stuff that we'd done. I mean, I he probably didn't think I was as famous as I am, because Vine doesn't exist anymore. So I went to show him a few of the funnier vines and stuff, but no, he basically thought it was a tit anyway.
But it's weird, because I kind of said, and I actually am going to use this platform. I do apologise to the fella that I singled out after the match for.
It was most un-Paul Machen.
I know. He fell victim to circumstance there, and my ire a little bit. And it could have been any, genuinely could have been anyone. If I'd heard anyone, I mean, just those who didn't see it, but I was complaining to some guy literally 2 minutes after the match had finished in the box, saying, oh, we'll probably draw and lose to Burnley. And something that's been winding me up for a while. And we've done a bit on it this week, and it annoyed me to the point where I kind of singled him out and a little bit of a go at him. He got back in touch this week and wasn't that very happy with that, which is perfectly understandable. I still stand by my point in terms of I still think there's a time and place for it all. Like, we're now midweek, we've had a few days, we've talked about it, we've revelled in the win. It was a great win, Chris. And we'll do a little bit more revelling in that in a moment. But obviously, I get now that there does come a point in the week where you do start to look at the next game. But it's still, I will apologise for individually picking out that guy. But as we've discussed it at length already, it is a thing that Liverpool fans, I think, need to get a little bit better at. We need to get a little bit happier as human beings in a general sense. Because it was a great win, and it was a very good game of football from a Liverpool perspective.
I thought it was one of the best performances of the season. You know, we had completely different opinions, I suppose, and thoughts on the game because of where we were in the ground. For me, that was one of the best atmospheres this season as well. You obviously, you know, didn't think it was anywhere near that.
Yeah.
And that's fair enough. But where I was, it was incredible. And the team on the pitch, some of the one-touch passing that we were playing, the interchanging of position and ball position with Lallana, Firmino, Coutinho and Sadio Mane was just like... It was the best that I've seen. I mean, I've seen us dick teams 5-1, 6-1 and all that this season. And for me to go and do that against an Arsenal side with Mustafi in the back there, who I thought actually had a good game, even though they conceded three.
Yeah.
You know, great players, a great squad, a good manager. We absolutely dicked them in the eye. We just got it out and just kept poking and kept poking. And their eyeball essentially went in on itself.
Yeah,
that concave.
It's not the analogy I've gone for, but it works. I'll certainly take that. Yeah, it was. We were good. Like you're right. It's in terms of the enthusiasm around it. I've said this a couple of times recently, and I want to be able to say it more. It was another one of those games that it was a pseudo Rafa-esque game for me, and it was more exciting than I think a lot, because Rafa Benitez, let's face it, you can count. We've almost had as many incredible wins where we snotted a team with great attack and football this season as we had under the entire reign of Rafa Benitez. We were far more just solid and tactical and what have you. But as I said, I talked about the inevitability of this game and the way that we just went about picking Arsenal apart was so nice. I don't think it was as... Although there were moments of it, I never felt this was as blood and thunder as some of the games we've had and some of the wins we've had under Jurgen Klopp. It just felt like a systematic, like, we know how to beat these. We're going to go out and we're going to do it in a really professional manner. We were so incisive in what we did that it was a joy in a completely, well, not a completely different way, but in a different way to what we've seen. Whereas I think we've seen games because we've been all in everyone's face and we've been tearing around the pitch. This felt a lot more controlled.
It did, and you know, I talk about it, and I do think it was blood and thunder, but it was controlled blood and thunder this time. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, as you said there, the right word I think that you used to sum it up was incisive. There wasn't any wasted energy in that performance, and I think at times this season and at times under Jurgen Klopp, you know, there has been a lot of wasted energy and there's been a lot of running for no need. And I think what we did better than anything was we transitioned from that quick pressing high up the pitch style of football to we'll just sit back a little bit, we'll wait for them, we'll take the ball off and then we'll spring our attacks.
Yeah.
It was much more controlled, it was much more thought out. The as I say, the interchanging of passing, the first touch of the forwards, you wouldn't, having watched the Leicester game, you wouldn't think it was the same three players playing up top, because their first touch against Leicester was shite.
Yeah.
And their first touch against Arsenal, almost every single time, they took on a man with it and they moved the ball on dead quickly. And it was such an Arsenal of maybe 5 years ago type of performance in the way that we passed the ball around and stuff. And for me, it was exhilarating to watch. And there was a period where Arsenal had control of the game between maybe 20 and 25. And then a little bit later on, maybe 70, they had another 5 minutes. This is Arsenal. They're a good side. They've been in the Champions League how many years on the bounce? They're used to going and playing these big games. And we dominated every phase of the football match. Not once did I think they were going to win.
I think they had two proper chances and probably another one or two of dangerous moments, really. And when you consider that was, you know, a great save from Simon Mignolet, you know, hats off to him. The one they scored, and then a couple where they fizzed across.
The Giroud header.
And we kind of, we had to throw our bodies on the line to get it clear and whatever, but that was fantastic. One thing that really pleased me was interesting. I watched a little bit of the Chelsea game, Chelsea West Ham on Monday, and I caught a bit of the analysis at the end, and they were breaking down, I think it was
walls,
yeah, barriers, left, right and centre, just breaking it down. Well, it was Carragher and Lampard, so you know, there was obviously a lot of healing going on there. Didn't
he say that Gerrard was a better midfielder, or has that been twisted on Twitter?
I don't know. Things do. It wouldn't. I don't know. Let's just guess, yes.
Because I can't remember who it was on Twitter. Is it Dave O'Cop or something like that? He does a lot of the news stuff about half 10 at night. And he tweeted that, you know, Lampard admitted that Gerrard was better. And then there was a load of replies going, was this from Monday Night Football? Because I didn't see this, basically. So I wonder whether they've just twisted his words.
I don't think he said better. I think he just said he was one of the best players you come up against in the Premier League.
Oh, well, he hasn't come up against himself, so that's nothing like what he was tweeted.
Only in the mirror. Only when getting out of bed every single morning.
He's got one above his bed, mate.
And trying to... Frank Lampard's got a mirror of his bed.
Well, you would, wouldn't you?
If you were Frank Lampard, or Yeah. I've got genuinely no idea where we were going with all. Yeah, there's a counter-attack goal that they score, and they go from the edge of their own 18-yard box to goal within like 11 seconds.
Yeah.
And they talked about how top teams are able to destroy it on the counter attack with pace, and they saw what the great Man United teams, etc. And when I was watching that, I did think about our goal, and how it wasn't quite as fluid as that, because I think it was a lot more intelligent in some respects, because of the Adam Lallana holding up and moving.
Divock
on.
Coming back onside and making his run.
But that we need, I want to see more of that, and obviously we just need. When Mane's your only pace in the team, it limits you. We've seen too many counter attacks break down. It was such a feature of the Rafa Benitez team, particularly with Pepe Reina in there supplying the ammunition, going long to Torres down the flanks or whatever. But that was, I mean, apart from the fact that it was genuinely rapturous when we scored that third goal, that was the thing that I enjoyed most about that, because if we're gonna compete, we need to be doomed that more often against teams that are trying to put pressure on us, you know.
And that's right, isn't it? Because look, they were pushing for a goal at the time, and hence the counter attack of it all. But we win the ball. I think it's Sanchez's shot that's blocked, isn't it? And then the ball breaks to Adam Lallana. We're a little bit lucky that it breaks to him. Then we're not lucky. Then it's all about how much determination, how much desire these players have got to go and get that third goal and put this game to bed. And, you know, Gini Wijnaldum's run from the 18-yard line of his own box. And you see him, we've talked about it. You see him, he's looking. He's got a feel for where the ball is. He's got a feel for how it's going down. And he sees the moment. As soon as the ball goes into Divock and the flag doesn't go up, he puts the afterburners on. Yeah. And there's no one on the pitch who wants that more, and the ball's fantastic, and the finish is a striker's finish. And then the crowd went fucking mental.
Yeah, absolutely bananas. It was absolutely amazing. So it was good, it was enjoyable. Great to chat to the Arsenal Fan TV boys. What I loved, one of my moments, because we were hoping to do some stuff with Robbie post-match, and then he was getting hassled by the police because basically they got moved away from Anfield toward the Arsenals, and then just loads of Liverpool fans were diving in on them.
It was brilliant.
And video bombing and blah, blah, blah.
Did you see all the stuff with the sun stickers?
Yeah, Liverpool fans were covering them head to toe and don't buy the sun stickers. Yeah,
they were talking about it yesterday, like laughing about it. Like, you know, fair play to Toops, in fairness, on his video, he gets a couple stuck onto his chest and stuff, and Robbie says they're really, you know, vociferous about this, aren't they? I don't think he used the word vociferous, but go ahead. And then Troops is like, you know what, I backed them, fair play, that's real. And you're like, you know what, that's boss. Yeah. I like to see that type of stuff. And for me, it's the first time that I've met Troops, and, you know, we're obviously mates with Robbie and stuff. I really liked him. Yeah. I think he's not putting it on for the cameras in any way, shape or form. That is Troops. I think he's a really nice guy, and I think he's got some bottle coming in here and basically shouting down Wenger while I'm just laughing at a camera, like for 15 minutes. So I basically said hello to them. If you've not watched the video, it's on YouTube. And then they started ranting, the two of them. And then it was about 10 minutes in, and I was just laughing at the camera, and Robbie realises what's going on, and that I'm just pissing myself towards the camera, and picks up the pillow and fucking throws it at my face, like. And it's such a good video, but they come off really, really well, like.
We've got actually James Alcott from Ball Street phone, and should we speak to him?
No.
James, we're recording our podcast, can you say hello?
Fantastic.
Technology at its finest.
Yeah, call failed. There you go, Paul.
Weird.
Brilliant.
That was a high point. He's obviously scared. This is what he's... Is he phoning me?
It's bread and butter, this, isn't it?
Yeah, this is absolutely...
To be honest with you. But look, you know, I'd love to have spoken to them after the game, because I think you see something a bit more raw and a bit more emotional. Yeah. I know that I was fucking off it after the game. Absolutely.
You were like Ric Flair.
Honestly.
You were like a young Ric
Flair. I said to you, I always do mine after you, don't I? And I was like, let me do this one. I need to get this out of my system now, like before. Because sometimes what can happen is you go for a big win and stuff, and...
So you go for a big win.
You have that big win, and by the time I get round to doing mine, it's like 20-25 minutes, and I think what you get is you get that raw emotion when you do a reaction straight after the game, and... I was definitely raw, and my throat was raw.
This is why I stopped interviewing you post match. Give you the moment, but no, and then this is right. Now, what was funny is that we Robbie had loads of issues at recording this post match stuff, so they didn't get round to us in time. But what was funny is how many Liverpool fans got onto it and decided to go over and just to watch the spectacle of it all.
Why wouldn't you?
And but when we walked, we thought we'll go and see if we can find them. And there's like three or four little lads, who are probably about 11. They were up and is that the Liverpool one? That's Redman TV. Redman TV! Arsenal fan TV, are there? Go and do them in, lads!
Like it's a scene out of Anchorman.
That'd be amazing. I genuinely love that.
Ancelo Wars, brilliant.
Yeah, that's it. And Robbie just be hosting. Wouldn't get stuck in, Robbie.
Yeah, you've obviously got to interview the winner. There's a million views.
I wanted just actually just on this side because the lads were up here. I got to do film a Wheel of Wank with Troops. Those who don't know what Wheel of Wank is, it's me and someone else playing really shit old football games via the medium of a spinning wheel. We had a couple
and consoles.
Yeah, we had a couple of Liverpool Arsenal games on there, and I was tempted to get him to I was tempted to fan cam him afterwards to see if he would react to his own performances. I said to him, "Listen, you're fucked here, mate, because if you're shit, what are you gonna do? How would a young Troops react to
Wenger out?
Troops out."
Troops out.
That's all I'm saying. It was good, and to be fair, it's always good after a win, isn't it? But moving forward, Burnley, and like I said, this is why I do apologise to people who are taking offence to me kind of having a go. I do get it. I do get people who are worried about it, because this is what I was saying in the final word was. There was an inevitability, which was a concerning inevitability, I felt, about the Arsenal game. I think a lot of people kind of took it for granted, because not in a way where we take like FA Cup third round games for granted and then we get snotted, but like in that kind of way where it's become the common narrative, we're good against good teams and we're shit against shit teams. And so I think that was always in people's minds, that people thought we'll be fine against these because we've proven we can do this, but we've got to be worried about Burnley. And my annoyance from that stems from, my God, I remember the times when we could never beat Arsenal, and I remember with seasons where like Brendan Rodgers couldn't beat a top team to save his fucking life, and then he had a little spell when he beat a couple, but by and large we were dreadful against our rivals under Brendan. So I'm buzzing to give you back to that. I think you can solve those other problems, but like I say, I get people's worry, because you know it is a big part of all,
you know,
our lives.
Like, look, I get people's worries and stuff as well. I just don't understand why people have to be vocal with them, because I don't think it helps anybody.
No.
It doesn't help anybody to look. These people are realists, and they'll say this, and that's cool. They think they're realists, and they probably are, and that's great. But the fact is, when you're not even out the ground, or you're just outside the ground, and the game finished 5 minutes ago, and you're already looking forward to Burnley, it's like I can't watch football like that.
Yeah.
I can't enjoy football like that, because, you know, we've got to take your time. You've got to look back, and you can be raw and emotional, and then you can, a day later, we talk about these results and stuff, and I let that flow over me. I get the good mood from a win, at least until the hump day in the week, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I'll start focusing on Burnley. But right then and there, when you're in the midst of those feelings, when your team's won, when they've won well, when it's against a big team, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I get it, and it's brilliant that they're realists, but I have got hope, and hope that Liverpool will turn it around, and hope is the difference between what I think I have and what a realist has, because I hope Liverpool will go and do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can say, look, historically, that might not be the case and stuff. I don't care. It's the only way that I can support Liverpool.
Yeah,
it's just, I can't compete it any other way.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me. There's a great line from Rob Gutman in the Anfield Wrap a couple of weeks ago, one of his match previews, and he says, look, I'm an optimist, but don't think that means I'm some sort of happy clappy dickhead, and like, he doesn't see the problems and blah blah blah, because and I say the same for me, people think that because I'm upbeat about stuff I'm somehow blind or whatever to it. I'm not. I choose to focus on the things that, you know, that make me happy, and I choose not to dwell on things that are going to cause negativity. I'll give you a great example of it. Second you have kids, all you spend the rest of your life doing is staving off negative thoughts of what might happen if.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And what would happen if my kids had to go through X, Y, and Z? So you literally, if I chose to think of every bad thing that could happen to people I loved, I would be fucking crippled all day long. But I don't. I choose to try and enjoy the moments, because that's the only way. That's realistically. And it was, again, I'm paraphrasing Rob, but look, at the end of the day, I'll give you the most realist thing you can say. We're all gonna fucking die. Yeah?
Mm.
We're all gonna die. the life does not end well, no matter what you how you choose to fill it. So given that's the case, I would choose to focus on the things that make me happy. Don't bother with the news. My people might say that's blinding to you, but if I can't, and it's a Jürgen Kloppism, but I try my best not to concern myself with things I can't control.
Certainly.
But what I can do is look at things that make me happy and go, yeah, I choose happiness. This is like a line from a couple of years ago as well. But and that's the thing with me. But as I say, we're now at that point of the week where you can't sit and fucking revel in wins for too long, because the next game does come. The next game is approaching, and Burnley's massive, because, and this is the thing, now I've always got it. If Liverpool don't turn it on against Burnley, I agree. What is the point of getting yourself up for the big games if you can't go and win games when they're the points that are going to get us in the top four? Ultimately, you play more games against teams in the 13 other places or whatever in the league than you do in the teams in the six or seven around.
That's it. And look, Liverpool have got to change something, I think, to go and play Burnley. They haven't won a game away from home all season. Their home records, I think it was about the third best in the league last time. We obviously got beaten at Burnley. This is an Anfield. This is a Liverpool side that's buoyed off the Arsenal result. They'll be obviously wondering and thinking about what's gone wrong against the other teams that have been lower down there, especially the relegation teams and stuff like that. Other teams in those relegation places, sorry. But regardless, long term, I genuinely believe, I really do, that this little patch that we're going through now with these teams that we're struggling against will make us a better side. Mm-hmm. Because historically, if you look at the Premier League, it's the team that does best in those mini leagues between the top four, top six, that goes on and wins the league, because they can beat them and generally all the other teams as well. So long term, as soon as we figure it out, we'll be fucking flying.
Well, I'm of the opinion that maybe we just don't possess enough tools, and there is the defensive side of things. I just don't think we're a million miles off it. And I've said this before, but I'm always. You're right. It's important that we get this side of things right. As you're saying, look, if we manage to get into the Champions League, and that's dependent on us sorting the other shit out, to be fair. But it was my dad saying, but Champions League, I'm gonna look forward to the Champions. I won't have as much trepidation about Champions League football next season if we get in there, because we've shown that we can handle ourselves against the top sides. Yeah. I would be more worried about the Europa League fucking FA Cup and blah 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 if we don't get a grip on the other side of things, you know.
Do you think he's going to change anything up for this game, Paul?
From what we've seen this season, I would. Give you an example. What do you do now? What's the groove you found on doing your starting 11s?
I always go for the team that last came out.
Exactly. So
that's what Klopp tends to do.
Exactly that. So whereas in the past we've kind of like stressed out over these and gone, got a cuppy, anyone X, Y, and Z, what we kind of found was, by and large, don't change too much, and more often than not, barring some sort of last minute moment, you're probably going to get Liverpool starting 11 right. It's been a lot more consistent under Jürgen Klopp. So my thinking is, it would be, if we go out with the same formation and more or less the same 11, you might see Lovren come in or whatever. I wouldn't be surprised. And how happy or unhappy I am about that will depend entirely on the performance and the result. Sitting here right now, thinking ahead to it and thinking about where we've struggled so far this season.
You're going to say Divock.
Well, yeah, Divock. I was gonna get to Divock. Absolutely. It was more about, I feel like we need to try something a bit different, and I don't mean throw some shit at the wall and see what sticks. I mean, I'm hoping that we've got another tactical plan, which, as you said there, might mean, yes, let's put Divock Origi up front, however, whatever that may mean, and find a way to play to his strengths, because I think we've said this already, haven't we? I think that Roberto Firmino is amazing and he's the right guy for those big games, but I'm not convinced he's the right guy for the games where we need to go and barge our way through a team and win a game.
I think you're right. And look, I think Firmino has struggled, and he struggles specifically when defenders play up against him. And that's what's going to happen against Burnley. They're not going to give him an inch of space to turn in. I would actually like to see Divock Origi given a game.
Yeah.
I really would this time. And, you know, he went through that patch where he scored 5-5, didn't he, just around Christmas and stuff. Didn't really play particularly well, I don't think. And I think a lot of Liverpool fans are the same. But what he's got is he's got that eye for goal. He's got that eye for half a yard of space in the penalty area because he's a striker, because he's done it his entire career, because he understands the movements of defenders, he understands the movements of wingers and how to find himself that little bit of space. And he could be the difference in a very, very tight game because of his physical attributes as well as his skill and his ability to find that space in the penalty area. So I wouldn't mind resting Roberto Firmino because it's City after Burnley, is it? Am I right in saying?
Yeah.
International break.
Oh, shy. City then break. We looked over to you for an input. Okay, City then international. That's better.
So I was right, yeah. Thanks. I'm going to carry on. A big game against Manchester City. Maybe you keep Roberto Firmino fresh for that.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Because this is the thing we had after that, after the Leicester game. We were all saying, we could do a change. We need to do something different. Arsenal's not the game for that. No, because we've got our game plan for those type of teams. So, yeah, I agree. I think Man City, I think we know how we're going to line up and how we're going to play against Man City. As we've said, those games sort themselves out to some extent.
But then equally, you know, having a little, you know, I'm probably thinking a bit too far ahead here, but, you know, with the way that the game played out at Anfield against Manchester City on New Year's Eve, that could have been a type of game for Divock Origi to really, you know, if he played in the way he did against Arsenal in those last few minutes, because we had nothing of the ball against Manchester City, and we were basically hitting them on the counter-attack, weren't we, for large periods of the game. That could actually look like a little bit of a game for Divock Origi, because he's got that pace to get in, he's got that ability to hit those wide spaces and trouble maybe Stones and Otamendi and whatever. So, but look, I'm on crack. You're starting Roberto Firmino all day because he's proven that he can do it in those big games. He's proven he can do it against them.
For Burnley though, because here's the conundrum nearly, is you gonna play against a team that's gonna park the bus. They're going to defend for their lives. They're going to defend even. Now, what Burnley were able to do away from home is they kind of sucker punched us early. They got two good goals, and we were fucked from then on, because once they're defending deep, you're always going to struggle to break teams down. Are you going to break a team down three times in order to get what you need from that? You're going to struggle to do that the best of times. As with anything, and this has been a consistent problem for Liverpool, Stoke used to do this all the time, if we get the goal in the first 15 minutes, I think we're absolutely splendid with this one. So the question is, what does Divock really bring? Because if our best chance of scoring goals, we score our most goals when we've got Coutinho, Firmino, Origi, Mane. We then change it to put Divock in. Who's missing? You were saying maybe Firmino misses out in that regard. But what is it that Divock's doing in that type of game? Because if they're sitting deep, he's not as skillful a footballer as Firmino.
I suppose the answer for me anyway for this is, like, he's got to occupy two defenders, and I don't think that Firmino does that in an attacking sense. I think physically he is just a bit more of a handful, but also the fact that he's got that extra pace over Roberto Firmino is that the other centre-back can't go too far away from his partner, because they are worried about that ball in behind if we are breaking. Mm-hmm. But also in an attacking sense, he can find that yard, he can get to the ball quicker if a good ball's whipped into the box, whereas I don't think Firmino offers you that. And I think Firmino is very good at counter-pressing. I think he's absolutely brilliant at that. I think we don't need to talk about that at all. But what Divock can do is he can find that space, he can find that half a yard of space, and he can actually occupy both centre-backs. And I don't think Firmino can do that.
Yeah, I think what's interesting, I mean, I know we found these problems to be consistent against teams that defend deep against us, who don't have the ambition to go and get something from the game. You know, I'd be interested to see how Mane handles this game, because obviously he famously missed the away game. This game for me is so important. Pardon me, simply because this is our advantage. This is the point now where we played this as an away game. We had those three away games to start the season off. And now this is when having this game at home at the back end of the season is supposed to be a thing for Liverpool. And as I say, this boils down to my whole thing about hope on the final word the other week and what have you. We could all just do with Liverpool doing the business,
yeah.
Because I'm sure we'll all breathe loads easier. Well, while we were talking, those who were watching the video of this on the RedmenTV.com will wonder why I was being really rude and looked like I was ignoring you. I wasn't ignoring you.
Kind of used to it.
Anyway. I was researching just on the Firmino stuff. I just thought it'd be interesting to look at actually who he scored his goals against, because we're saying he can't perform against the lesser light of the Premier League and whatever. Well, this is the thing, yeah, and obviously this has to be qualified by the teams that we snotted early on in the season either haven't done or will not play that way against us necessarily in the second half because of the way we absolutely twatted them everywhere the first time around. But just to go through it, two against Leicester at Anfield from left wing, one against Swansea, one against Crystal Palace, one against Watford, scored from left wing against Stoke. Scored another two against Swansea a couple of weeks ago.
The thing is, though, Paul, you can't measure what Firmino brings to that side in just goals, can you?
Well, let's have a look.
It's about creating space. It's about creating movement.
Yeah.
Sadio Mane is our top scorer because Roberto Firmino's playing up top.
Yeah, what's telling is this, because again, even like his assist against Spurs, assist against Swansea when he got his goal as well, assist against West Brom, two against Watford, and then he hasn't actually registered an assist in the league until this week against Arsenal. So when you look at it, what we've talked about, like that turnaround in approach to playing us, when you go almost from Watford onwards, that's only four goals he scored, only four goals and one assist since we played Watford back in, dates in the wrong order, November, the 6th of November. So maybe there is a case for this. I certainly hope so, because much like Emre Can's got a long way to go, I think, to A, become the footballer that I think he thinks he can be, and also his supporters think he can be as well. We discussed this week, I think, on the final word as well. He needs game time. He needs to prove himself. Divock Origi, funnily enough, I was talking to John Aldridge about this last week when we were doing the William Hill 4-4 tube thing, and we were asked about, off camera, we were asked about Chan and we were asked about Origi, and his words, he's dead right, they've both gone backwards this season. And whether that is simply limited to amount of game time, which I think will be a contributing factor, I think it's right. I think both of Divock Origi's got a lot to prove. I think we had such high hopes for him last season. We felt so comfortable with our attacking options in the summer, and yet now we're facing in and running into the campaign where we need to get as many points on the board as possible. We've hit a wall and hit a problem that we're struggling to overcome with regards to these low block teams. If Firmino's not the answer, Divock Origi's going to have to step up, I think, and be the answer, because if he can't be the answer, I don't see where he's going to be getting a lot of football for Liverpool.
You know, it's a really interesting point, and you know, I'd not considered the has he gone backwards question. And as soon as you said it, I'm starting to think about it. I'm like, he probably has, hasn't he? Mm. You know, and that's not good for a player of his age and his ability. So you're right, he does need to step it up, and he needs to be given the opportunities to step it up. Because I think the one thing you can level at him, Arsenal. Is that he's not a good substitute. He's not good when he comes into the game, and you know, and it was a point from the final word that someone brought up, and maybe that's because we're always losing. You know, it was a little bit different against Arsenal. The game suited him rather than we're trying to force him into our game plan to try and get a lucky break or something like that. Yeah. Whereas I actually felt that the substitution against Arsenal was perfect because of the way that they were playing, the way that the game was panning out at that time. And, you know, if we play more to his strengths, maybe we'll see more out of him. Maybe that's just the way we've got to do it.
No, I agree with that. And I hope we do, because, like we've said, we have... I don't think, I'm going to say we play one way. I don't think it's not true in the strictest sense. It's not like Roy Hodgson teams play one way.
No, there's intricacies in this formation.
Yeah, we have a general approach, yeah. and there's loads of movements underneath that. But we've seen, and it's happened, it's happened many different times at Liverpool for many different centre forwards and what have you. It's that we often don't change our style of play to the options, and it's actually been a limitation of Liverpool under a number of managers, where you've got a guy who works amazingly well for you, and unless you've got another guy who replicates that, there's a massive drop off when that guy's not in the team.
Torres and go,
exactly. But even actually, to some extent, there was an attempt with that because you had a pacey lad who had good feet and whatever. So that was
it's
that
about
was a reason
building the squad, though, isn't it? You know, you can't come in and do this from what you know. As bad as it is, and he's had a couple of transfer windows, it's still Rodgers' side for the most part.
But the point I'm making is yeah, exactly. But in the absence of being able to do that, you're right, preaching a little bit. It's going to take a few seasons to get all the players and all the system in place. Yada yada. The point I'm kind of driving at is what you were saying. The point earlier almost is we should, I think, anyway, I think that's what it all boils down to. We should be looking to modify our approach to get the best out of someone else because, and I hope that we've learned this lesson. I hope it doesn't take a draw or a defeat against Burnley for us to go, okay, we now definitely know.
Yeah, well, we know already, to be fair.
We know. Exactly that.
Of the things that I'd level at Klopp is, we spoke about it earlier, he does tend to play the same side every single week, and that can become very, very easy for an opposition manager to you know, the problem to solve. And it's just... Yeah, to have Burnley thinking about Roberto Firmino and his movements and then just to throw Divock Origi in as a surprise could really, it damages the confidence of the squad. They don't really know what to expect. They've trained all week for a certain type of a player and a certain type of approach. Yeah. And to just tweak it slightly can cause them to derail. And that's what we've not done enough of. And I don't think we've quite got the players yet to be able to say, we can do this every single week and you can't stop us.
Yeah.
Because I think it's proven that teams can stop us.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with that. The one thing that he's got going for him, and to be fair, like I think Daniel Sturridge just got this going for him as well, and it's sad that we've come to the point now where he's not even in me thinking for this game. Even if he was to, you know, I know he had an injury off the back, he had a virus and then he picked up a hip injury or something, didn't he?
He's done, mate.
Well, yeah, hopefully he's got something. Hopefully he's got something to contribute between now and the season. I wouldn't like to see his career fizzle out. But as I said, the thing that Divock Origi's got going for him is, and we've seen it with the goals he did score, because he scored some very important goals in the Sunderland game in particular, at Anfield. He give him a sniff and he'll stick the ball in the back of the
striker.
Net. Exactly. And something like that. So I hope we do modify what we do slightly. And if we put Origi in there, I hope we play to his strengths. That, or if we're not, here's the thing with Origi, if we're not going to play to his strengths and we're playing him in his best position, then you might as well use him out wide.
Yeah.
You know, and we've not seen any sign of that either, to be fair, but I wouldn't be against the idea of putting him on the wing just to stretch his legs out. Well, this is it, and not in our current system, but in a 4-2, if you did a 4, let's say a 4-2-3-1 for the sake of argument, someone good is missing out, no matter which way you slice it, but you could put Phil Coutinho in the 10, or you could put him on the left. That means the line is, I don't know. These are the eternal conundrums that we have. But, you know, I back the manager and the management team to sort it out to some extent. But no,
cool, exciting. Man.
And we'll be doing more of this, of course, on the Uncensored Match Build-Up Show. If you're new to Redmen TV, if you think this is just a podcast, it's not. I'm looking at the camera. Those who are watching on the RedmenTV.com will know it's not. But if you're just listening on iTunes or whatever, please make sure that you give a five-star review.
A five-star review for how many times Liverpool have won the European Cup.
That'll do. And say some nice words about us because it helps. But also, if you want more of us chatting Liverpool, you can do youtube.com/TheRedmenTV or TheRedmenTV.com, where all of our exclusive shows go on, and that makes all of this possible. So...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Oh, yeah. So, right. So, we normally do, I say normally, this is our third podcast. We've got the get in the bin format, where we choose something from Liverpool culture, what have you, to put in the bin, room 101 style.
Got the jingle now as well.
Have we?
Get in the bin.
I really thought you could. I genuinely thought you picked his phone up and I thought you had something for us.
It was a video gag as opposed to an audio gag.
Get in the bin. Get in the bin. Get in the bin. Anyway, so what we put a spin on this week, and the spin comes courtesy. Ooh. Right, look at the state of this agenda. Someone put some paper back into the printer, divvy. And then the printer stopped working. So
divvy's not a word you hear often.
I love the word divvy. I noticed the troops was using ham roll a lot.
I don't understand what
so
it meant.
So what it is it's just nothing, and it's just the most plain and boring nothing thing. So calling someone a ham roll,
like vanilla,
yeah, you know, it's like it's just such a nothing thing that it's better than calling someone a twat. You're not even that. You're so shit. So I'm not even going to waste the swear word.
It doesn't work like that, troops. Doesn't work like that. There's different types of ham, mate. You know what I mean? Like ham is exclusively from the hind legs of a pig. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I've always wondered, actually.
Right.
Because there are a lot of things that you get.
So there's
from
a lot
the
of
pig.
Things that goes into making ham. So to just say it's fucking boring and dismiss it like
what's
that
the difference
is fucking
between
ridiculous.
Like a pork chop and bacon?
Bacon. It's from where it is in the pig. To be honest with you, it's got
I've
to gone be. To,
I felt like you had this knowledge.
I probably did have this knowledge.
not today.
Yeah.
So anyway, normally we say get in the bin, but thanks to Alban Olverborn, who's at Olverborn on Twitter, he suggested
like
that
honey
we do...
roast ham. Do you know what I mean? It's like
it's better, but you know
he probably eats that processed shite, doesn't he?
Yeah, but in terms of it, you know, in terms of like the you got ham butties. Is this why you're defending them so vociferously? I thought, hang on a second. There's a root behind this. But in terms of how the butties go, like ham butty as a solid butty choice, but it's not like the king of butty choices.
No,
it?
Of course it's not the king, but it's not the worst.
It's like
either.
Saying someone's bread and butter, or
like paste. You know what I mean? Yeah. Paste, like, which is essentially fucking cat food. That's a shit butty. Mm. That's a proper shit butty. Ham. We're lucky to be able to get as much access to ham as we do nowadays.
True. But the point is that a paste butty is shit. It's terrible. Ham butties are just... If someone gives you a butty, it's literally the most common. It's probably the most common sandwich meat.
You don't know
in
that,
everyone's
Paul.
Fridges. I would be prepared to state that. You know why? Because we're not particularly an expansive family when it comes to what foods we buy, and ham is just. And my missus is not a very picky eater. Ham is just a solid resource to go to. I would suspect. Let us know when you find star review on iTunes. But yeah.
And a roll. There's so many different types of roll.
Yeah.
You've got to be more specific, Toops.
But this is the point. I think you're missing the point.
I'm not missing the point.
I'm
not backing down. I'm not missing the point.
I don't think it's for you. But divvy is pathetic. Divvy is the equivalent, I think, because divvy is... It's just not, you know, don't waste the energy on someone by being really angry and calling them something really nasty. Divvy's just such a funny, is a funny word, isn't it? Like, anyway, cheers to Alban Olverborn, who suggested rather than get in the bin, it's get out the bin. So, what are we what of Liverpool's culture past that we no longer do anymore?
Winning league titles, Paul.
Winning league titles.
Can we go back to that?
Yeah.
Right, mic drop, done. End of podcast. That's it. Yeah. You're not getting better than that.
Yeah. It's good. I think that's as good an answer as you're likely to get. In the interest of just drawing
it
out for a few
more
moments.
It's more than a ham roll, is it?
What?
Winning league titles, it's more than a ham roll. What's that in the roll?
I don't know.
No? Is that like pulled pork
roll? I don't think it's a scale of sandwiches. You get me? Listen, all right, Sam. So, for me, if I had to get something out of the bin for Liverpool culture, dust it back off and bring it back into our day-to-day Liverpoolian lives, good songs for footballers who we like. We did it at the start, the Genie One album. It's shit. It's catchy, but it's shit.
I love it.
Mane, it's catchy, but it's shit.
I love it.
No, I know, but this is how far we've fallen, Chris. You're accepting mediocrity.
I'm not accepting mediocrity. I don't even know whether I'm FSG in or out.
Stop escaping the microphone as well.
I'm trying to shout loud.
No, this is the problem. I think, because people can talk about, the money we're spending, I know the owners, I know the manager, I know the tactics, and blah, 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 blah. The thing that sums up Liverpool's decline more than anything else is our horrendous songs and chants that we have for players. What's the best current song or chant that we have?
Paul Scott and Tommy.
Okay, I mean of the newbie for players that we have.
I think it's probably them.
Phil Coutinho,
crap. In the grand scheme of things, Phil
Coutinho is like the tail end of the old way of doing things, where we picked a
Lucas
Leiva's
not too bad.
Lucas Leiva, yeah, I don't mind Lucas Leiva, but again, I don't think it's that good either.
No, you're right, Paul. You are right. These songs aren't good enough. But it is for me anyway. It's from a more widespread problem. I think what you used to have in the Kop and what you used to have in Anfield is a group of people who used to go there every single week.
Yeah.
A brethren, a fucking people who understand each other and are from the same thing. And unfortunately now, with the way that football's gone and modern football being the way that it is, you do get these rotation of fans coming in and out, and they might come in once in their entire life and they might come in once a season. But what that means is that you don't get that support in quite the same way. It's very difficult to get a song that takes a lot of effort, that's got a lot of words that people need to fucking remember to get it off the ground, because ultimately you are getting loads of people coming into the ground, whether they're from Liverpool or whether they're from far away, that don't know the words to these songs. So what happens is we've made shorter songs and we've made them very, very catchy and we've made them very easy to pick up because anyone can fucking sing it. Mm-hmm. You know, the best atmospheres are when the Kop start singing Liverpool, 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 because it's so fucking easy and everybody in the ground can know the words to it, and that's what creates good atmosphere nowadays. And unfortunately we've moved away from those songs where you can go with the choruses and all that type of stuff. It's the way that modern football's gone. I don't think it's actually the people. I think the people are still the same.
Yeah.
A large part of them, especially up in those singing sections and stuff, they sing songs that I don't hear and that I've never heard before, and I don't know the words to, and I'd love to know some of the words, because you go to the away games and they're spouting all these songs. They're still there. They might not be current, but you can't get that. Even my favourite chant of all time isn't sung the way that it should be sung in the Kop. When you go to an away game, you know, I was born under a live bird. That is incredible, because that can go on for 10, 15 minutes and create something and build up to something.
Yeah.
And it's such an easy song, yet you can't do it in the Kop because it just dies out.
You know what the problem? I think there's that, absolutely. But I think there's a couple of elements to it, is that we don't have a genuine hero anymore who we're like desperate to give an amazing song to. Like, the man is just fine. And I also think we're a bit accepting of that'll do. There's a bit too much of that will do about it. And also I think we've struggled as well, because maybe we've just been unlucky with how players' names scan into songs. I think we need to think this about the transfer policy.
Well, this is the thing, you know, we're a more a multicultural, a multinational football club now, and we're getting players from all over the world. It was easy when they were called fucking Jones and Miller and all that type of fucking English name.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy.
But I don't even think that. Maybe we just need more South American and Spanish. They seem to work really well.
You know,
when we had all the Spanish lads, they used to fit tremendously into songs. Really, really well. And that is the thing. For me, the last time we had it, the last decent song we had was Luis Suarez. But that in itself was nowhere near as good. In fact, follow on, because Blaine Agard at Blaine LFC asked us what our favourite LFC chants were, and he said he loved the Maxi and Torres ones. This is the thing, the Torres chant, and I know he's like, you love that chant big time. Like, that was the pinnacle, I think, in recent years of us creating an amazing chant for someone. The only thing I'm glad about is that we've been resistant to all the other same shite chants that everyone else seems
to have.
Good. That I don't know the words, but that everywhere we go, every fucking team sings that. I don't know what the words are. I don't care to know the words. There's the We've Got Mesut Ozil song and all that. I'm glad that, because I have this theory that, I think I've said this to you before, but I've not said it on a podcast before, so I'll say it now, is that football fans, and it goes back to what you were saying, it's becoming more and more like the wrestling.
Yeah.
And now I remember going to the Liverpool Echo to watch Raw taping a few years ago, and do you remember the Stone Cold Steve Austin thing?
Yeah, of course I do.
So when we were wrestling fans, he invented that.
What?
Exactly. Please don't do it anymore. It makes me so angry. But it's one of those things where it came in and it was the worst thing that ever happened to wrestling, because what you come to realise when you go to the wrestling, it's 10,000 different people every single week, and they may get to go once, so they want to do the fucking what thing. And that's the thing that happens now, is that every football team has got the same fucking chance, because they want
to sing about Gerrard slipping.
Exactly. And they're the ones that go, and Liverpool have resisted that, but we are slipping and we're crumbling away. We need to actually build up something. You need trophies,
you need big wins, you need big plays, yeah. You need things to happen on a world stage to be able to create these things. You need to go over to Europe and hear chants of other songs, because let's face it, yeah, lots of Liverpool's chants were from European teams and from on your travels. You hear songs and you see fans singing songs that you've not heard before, yeah, and you can take that and you can make that your own, because it's an experience that you've all got together. Yeah. That's what makes football fucking so good. That's what makes chants so good, and that's what we don't have enough of.
Well, exactly. But you look at what's happened. The best things that we've come up with lately have been Merry Christmas, Everton.
Yeah, brilliant.
You know, and it's not like an amazing chant, but it actually is. And I'm gutted that we had to, that's gone. You know what I mean? Because it was a good Mane song, and it's gone by the wayside.
The other one that's now a big part of it is the Poetry in Motion, and We Are Liverpool. Yeah. That was a good chant.
That's actually become an established chant, hasn't it?
And that's because of the way that we play football, yeah, at the time. Like, so you've got to get something from the team, yeah, to create these chants.
Loads of people hated the Brendan Rodgers one, but at least it was something. It caught on. It did okay.
Colin Pascoe's chant was a belter.
Yeah, yeah. But even, I'm not sure that was ever really
it was niche, and I like that.
Yeah, I must admit it. Pascoe's chant was the best. But the thing that we've got, like, I do wonder with the guys who, I know there's not like a little group of fellas who invent these and then wheel them out. It can't, they're organic things that happen. But I do think there are a lot of fellas who go their ways.
Bob Marley. From the City stuff.
Yeah.
But again, it's what I'm talking about. It's you go on your travels, yeah, and it was Wembley. Like,
yeah, exactly.
But you have that feeling where you're all together and some guys just got up in the middle of a bus and started singing this. That's wicked.
The problem I think we've got is that, again, what's happening is we're so short on amazing songs that I do think we're almost going, oh, that's funny. Yeah, oh, that'll do. You know what I mean? Like, we got the Jürgen Klopp song's the best example of this. When you hear it, when you're in the concourse, I was at Villa away last year, and we were singing it on the concourse, and it was fucking brilliant. Absolutely loved it. It's dead. No one knows the proper words to it, and it's a weird tune, so it doesn't have a natural flow to it. Let's be honest. All told, it's a bit shit. You know, the chanting and all that. It's just crap. It's not as good. But like Jürgen Klopp says, he doesn't want us to sing it anyway. A, because it's shit, and B, because he wants us to be successful first before people start singing his name, which is great. So hopefully we develop that. But I do kind of feel like there's these little events will happen, maybe on a coach, or maybe there's a group of people they have those boss nights and stuff in Liverpool, and someone whips something out, and we go, That'll do. Whereas I think they've become the attempted good songs have become a bit niche. Whereas they're not as, no one's hit upon it. We just need to stumble upon, like the Three Little Birds thing, like the Merry Christmas thing. We need to find a fucking boss catchy song. It, you know what annoys me? Sorry, I've been talking for 20 minutes now. Why Arsenal have got the Giroud doing Hey Jude? Like, why haven't we? I know. Maybe no one fits for it. Why that Liverpool should have a fucking Hey Jude variants instead of going to the constant, like, Danny Ings, no, it was the fucking Harry Kuehl song, it was the fucking Joe Cole song. We were basically condemning Danny Ings to failure by giving him that song.
Yeah,
I want some originality in fucking songs anyway. Rant over, everyone be funnier and better. I reckon we get the Ragamuffins in and get them right some belters.
I like that idea.
Yeah, we'd be mean. Oh, that's Shy. Do you want fancy doing writing some belting Liverpool chants?
I'll have a go.
Excellent. Size bang up for it.
I wouldn't say bang up for it.
He said they'll have it.
I did actually think of one.
Yeah?
I think it might be shit.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll come over and
go. Oh, here we go. Size coming in. Producer Si.
Mane and Coutinho, Rigi and Firmino, Lallana. La, do you reckon that?
Yeah.
It's not going to catch on.
But it's the na 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 na. Why not la 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 la?
Actually, you just thought of that now.
I I thought of it a couple of weeks ago.
I like it.
That's good. Like Lallana's the one for me who I think there's so much potential for. Everyone loves Lallana.
His name's basically a song.
Isn't it? It's basically a song. He's got a natural rhythm to his name. So yeah, something to do with that would be fucking tremendous. Questions. So we're bringing the ability to win league trophies and songs out of the bin for this week. Yeah. Jack Hamilton, Chris asks, he's Jack Hamilton 203. If we sell Sturridge, who would be your ideal replacement? And then what he's done is put Ask the Club, because like a divvy, I put the tweets out for Social Club on Ball Street and I then used that hashtag on a Redmen tweet.
Dickhead.
Peering behind the curtain there. Go on.
Who would be an ideal replacement for Daniel Sturridge?
No, the question is, if we're going to play one up front and we're going to keep Firmino and Origi, and well, let's just say Danny Ings is still a thing, do we need to go and buy another built-for-it centre-forward?
Yeah.
Or do we need someone who can do, like a Sanchez, who can do that and do that really well, but he can also play him from the left and play from the right?
Fucking striker, mate. Just get a fucking striker in. Get him in. Look at the other top teams in the league. That's why they beat teams lower down the league.
Yeah.
Because they've got a guy who can score 20 to 30 league goals a season.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of those teams, and our striker scored 10 or whatever, and our right winger scored 12. It's amazing what Sadio Mane's done. Yeah. But he can't be our top scorer. That's what's fundamentally wrong with our team.
Yeah.
You've got to go out there, and I don't know the name of the player, but what I will say is he's got to be able to do it all. He's got to be like a Diego Costa. He's got to be like Alexis Sanchez. He's got to be Aguero. He's got to have Aguero's finishing with Alexis Sanchez's work rate. You know what? Divock Origi is brilliant. How old is he?
22.
Should he be starting for Liverpool at 22? Or should we have someone who's 27 banging in goals and Divock learning from? We've got plenty of time with Divock Origi. We really have.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, at least 2 years until he's in the team full time.
Yeah.
If he hasn't proven that he's Lukaku, like,
yeah. But
you know what I mean?
But here's the thing with the Divock Origi thing, again, if we're going to go out, yeah, I agree, if there's someone out there who's that age, there's the problem. I don't think there's someone out, people might say Lacazette. And I got no problem. I wouldn't mind us taking the punt on Lacazette. The guy scores goals.
I don't think he's that guy.
I don't know, but the point is, you know, if you're looking around, a guy that hasn't secured that big move, who's in the prime now of his career, he's in his mid-20s, and he's probably ready for that step up. If someone's going to take a punt on him at some point, maybe he's it. My thing is, and this is where I think we're in an unusual situation, is because if David Rodriguez 22 going 23. Again, where we've had our best success in buying the guys who are the 30 goal a season.
I'm not interested in buying them at that age, though.
But what
I'm interested in buying
that,
them at the prime.
Oh no, true. But the point I'm making is, I don't think that player exists at the, you know, at the level that we want. We're looking.
Maybe
at,
that's
I think
the
they're
case.
Already. I think
maybe that's
happy.
The case.
They're
and to be and to be perfectly honest with you, look, Divock Origi, and I think he'll go on to achieve good things in football. And whether it's at Liverpool or not, I hope it's at Liverpool. I really do. I really like him as a player. But what you've got to remember is he's got no one to learn from. Who's he learning from squad?
Yeah. Well, Sturridge.
Daniel Sturridge, great. He's learning how to sit on the fucking bench or not in the fucking changing rooms every week. Fan fucking tactic. Thank you very fucking much.
Yeah.
No, he's not learning from Roberto Firmino because he's not the same type of player. He's no one there for him to look up to.
Yeah.
He needs someone who's fucking world class.
So if that's the case, why surely it's more someone who's maybe toward the, who was world class toward the tail end of the scale.
Why would you ever want to get someone under the decline?
Because
if there's if there's an imaginary player out there, mm-hmm. you're getting them in the prime or just before it, aren't you? Right before it.
Yeah.
You know, and you have them for the 2-3 years of their prime. You do. And look, it could be that there isn't that guy, as you said, and then maybe, you know what, maybe I'd consider it. If it's fucking Zlatan at 35, I'd have considered it.
Yeah.
Definitely, and I'd love Liverpool to have signed Zlatan from what he's done this
season. But
what
if it's someone like a Cavani or a Benzema, someone like that?
Sound?
Yeah.
Absolutely sound. Show him the way.
Yeah.
Do you know, that's all it's about, isn't it? He's got to have someone that he can look up to, that he can go, wow, look, if you train like this, if you move like this, you can score goals like this and you can have a career like that, that's brilliant. That's what developing players is. It's not buying them and hoping they turn out all right.
That's the thing, though. The problem is that Divock Origi would, if we were buying him this summer, he would fit them. That's what I'm trying to say. Is he would fit the mold for what we normally go out and buy.
Except we've seen him.
Exactly. But that's the point. Is that And then is that just down to, I just want someone else because I want someone else?
No, I want someone who's going to get us between 20 and 30 league goals next season, and I don't think Divock's that player.
Right. Based on...
He's not scored 20 goals in a season in his career.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. No, that's fine. Let's just say it's that thing of where I hope Divock Origi doesn't fall into the trap of that of us having bought him too young and not been able to develop him. And it what because here's the problem: if we're not going to play to a guy's strengths, you can buy whoever the fuck you want.
You're right.
You know, if we need the guy who's playing centre forward to play like Roberto Firmino, then we could buy Sergio Aguero and he wouldn't score fucking 25 goals for us. That's the issue we've got, because right now we've got, I think I say, Divock Origi has got by and large all the attributes that
you're
we're
right.
talking about. The only thing that's, the only way he's going to prove himself to score 20 goals a season, if he plays 10-15 games where we actively look to get him in the way that he plays football.
You're not wrong at all, but look, we've seen that over Jürgen Klopp's career as a manager, he has had players that can score those goals, and he's had them in striking positions playing up top on their own, the likes of Lewandowski, the likes of, all right, Aubameyang got better probably when he left, but who was the guy, was it Moore or something like that before Lewandowski, I forget his name now. These guys scored 20 goals from that place playing the same style of football, so you can do it. It's just that Roberto Firmino, I don't think, is that striker.
Yeah, just then in terms of it, then pick someone. We're not necessarily someone who's a realistic signing or whatever, because we say an ideal replacement. Who playing in football now? Would you?
I've said it before, and I've said it again. I think Aubameyang's the player that I'd have because he's got that pace. But I think if you look at something maybe a little bit more realistic, I actually kind of like Cavani as the fit for that because he's a guy who, you know, he's been playing at PSG. He played second fiddle to Zlatan for a long time. I think he's still got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, and I think, you know, from a mental standpoint, that could really suit like a Liverpool.
Yeah, no, I agree. For me, it's not Diego Costa when we tried to sign him.
Yeah.
Not Diego Costa now, because I think he's just probably a little bit slow for what we need. And this is the thing with it. I look around and I'm not. Like Aguero. Yeah. I still don't know who it is, because again, it just boils down to how we choose to play football. You're right that what you want is someone who does the lot, and Aubameyang is the one who fits the bill. Tall, athletic, great shot on him. Good feet,
pace 99,
exactly. Yeah, but this is the state. This is the situation where we're at. It's kind of the managerial merry-go-round from like a year ago. Is that I don't know whether the players who are in their prime, are we? Ignore the fact that Liverpool haven't won the Premier League and blah blah blah, and maybe even ignore the finances to some extent. It's more that, are these players moving, and would they be made available to us? Because why if Chelsea maybe they move Costa on, is that would you be if he was moving on and he was available? We're talking about Aguero, we've talked about Sanchez, Costa's gonna go. Would you want Diego Costa in that team?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think what Liverpool need as much as anything else is someone to wear the number 9 shirt, and be fucking amazing at scoring goals, and someone who gets a brilliant chance therefore off the back of it, etc. Because we've been sorely lacking that, and you do just have to go back to Fernando Torres, since we had a guy who you could go, wow, you know. He, when you look at the history of the people who wear that shirt, you want someone who's befitting of that shirt.
You do, and you want that number 9, and you want the guy to remember the number on the back of his shirt and not the name, and you want him to remember the number and the badge on the front. That's what you want from your striker.
We've got too many of those issues, I think, with that in our squad at the minute. It's like James Milner having the number 7 shirt. You know, that's a shirt that for me, Liverpool's 3 best players should be 7, 9, and 10. And I know obviously people might go 8th, Gerrard. Yeah, fine, but you know,
historically.
Yeah, you know, I know Ray Houghton wore it and John Aldridge wore it. Just even Gerrard kind of really broke the mold on that one. Thanks very much for your question, Jack. Stephen Beerman asked via Facebook, what are your thoughts on the Mario Goetze situation? With Klopp reportedly willing to sign him, would you still take him despite snubbing us and his injury issues? For 20 million, I'd take the gamble, but can understand why some won't.
Yeah, I find this one quite difficult to find where my head is at on it, to be honest with you. I think,
where is your head at?
It's where your head at? I was really pissed off last summer when he wanted to stay.
When he wanted to go back to Dortmund.
And you know, because of the money stuff and the Champions League and Klopp coming out and saying that he wanted players who want to be here, maybe now he wants to be here. A little bit worried about the disease that he's got, I suppose.
Well, that's the thing. At the minute, we just don't know what that's all about. There's loads of speculation about it, isn't there? I had a quick look into it because I'd heard it mentioned and I wasn't really that interested. But ahead of this, I thought I'd have a look. And at the minute, the last report I saw was he's basically sitting at home doing fuck all, waiting for them to develop a treatment plan for him. And I think this came about because he's had so many muscular injuries. They were trying to find the root cause of it and they stumbled upon this. There's a question asked by the German a German publication, I forget which one, and they basically said these players are tested to the nth degree every single season on such a regular basis that this has been overlooked or not been seen. It's a great, a wonderful expression. That it says, has this problem been kicked into the long grass by a team in the past? Which I love that. I like the idea of like kicking there. Well, you know, let's not
loads of balls in that long grass.
Exactly. And that's the big issue with Goethe, because you're talking 20 million quid. 20 million quid of your budget. If you get him, it's similar to the Mario Balotelli argument, isn't it? Is that is a steal for a guy who showed that level of quality a couple of years ago. But if you can't guarantee his fitness,
here's the thing. Spunking 20 million we're getting the Bayern Munich doctor at the end of the season, aren't we?
No.
Aren't we now?
No, I don't know. I know Klopp went back and got rebuffed for one a couple of weeks or so ago.
Right, like. Okay. Well, I thought either way, you speak to him and you ask him what the fuck went on. Look, if Klopp and the medical team decide that it's the right move and he thinks he can get some other play, I'm always going to back the manager, mate.
Yeah, exactly that. But I think on a personal perspective, given it exists in the pie in the sky world, I think we've had too many players that we can't rely upon.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'd rather, this is the thing, this is where I think people get hung up on the names. And you know, this comes back to this guy about buying guys in the peak. The problem with buying guys in the peak is that if they're fucking genuinely amazing at footy, odds are they're going to cost you 50, 60, 70, 80 million pounds. And odds are they're going to go and sign for Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, fucking Man United, Man City, etc., etc. To get a guy in his prime who's good enough to improve our first team, there's like, it's money ball, isn't there? There's got to be something wrong with him.
But this is where FSG, I think, have to stand up and put a marker down, because they're not gonna, they're gonna still have all these people going FSG out until they prove that they're willing to risk for a reward. And I think so far, I don't think I've seen enough of that from them.
Or we just have success. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the problem we've got is that we've seen that already to some extent. I don't know what the issue is, because you just looked at the Bucks thing last week. We made a loss because we spent money on players, and I guess that's what the big issue is. How much loss are we prepared to take on these things? No, you are right. That I just do wonder whether we're ever going to be that club that goes out and spends. Are Liverpool going to break the world transfer record?
No.
Under FSG? No. And I don't necessarily think that's a massive criticism of FSG, but I think it's more that I do. Yeah,
but we can break ours, mate.
Yeah,
and we have done, in fairness.
Yeah, and they have as
we
well.
We need to go out there, I think, and put a marker down.
Yeah. No, I do.
We're a big club, and we should fucking act like.
But this is the thing, isn't it? Is Yeah. But again, in getting back to the Goethe thing, I would rather spend £20 million on a guy who's 22, ready to make that breakthrough. I'd rather go and buy the next Goethe than buy the current Goethe. Yeah, because
I suppose it's the Balotelli thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly that. It could work out really well, and I would love it. I would love Manuel Goethe at Liverpool, because when he's playing and he plays well, he's boss at footy, isn't he? And all the hype around him. I think we need a little bit of that hype. Because look at Sadio Mane, for fuck's sake. Sadio Mane is fucking amazing. But so many people were raging that we signed him, because, let's be honest, they'd have rather have signed Goethe, because, let's be honest, they know who Goethe is. He's a big name. He's the kind of player that their Arsenal and United mates and all that would go, oh, I'd have had him. But Sadio Mane's come in and done the absolute business for us.
But
it's not about what your Man United and your Arsenal mate think before they play for you. It's what they think afterwards. Yeah. And right now they're all looking at Sadio Mane and going, "Fuck, exactly. I'll be miss out on
exactly.
him."
Exactly. Everyone's jealous of the Sadio Mane. But I look back and I think we all. We were all keeping a tentative eye on Fernando Torres because he was amazing in Footy Manager, you know, and he was threatening to break through and he looked like he was ready to make that step. And then we got him and everyone was like, wow, he was the envy of everyone because we were the ones who took the plunge on him. And similarly Suarez as well. So yeah, that's the thing for me. I don't think I'd like us to be that club. Don't get me wrong. I'd love us to go and spunk £50 million players solve it all. But I think I would be just as happy for us to go and buy. And you know, again, as you say, it's the end product that's the most important thing sometimes. And spending big money doesn't necessarily guarantee success. Because look at Paul Pogba. No, I don't think there's any questions over his ability. I think he's a tremendous footballer. But I would be, if that's the marker that we're looking at laying down.
Yeah,
I still think I just think it's a massive waste of money. You know, I would rather us buy two players for that price than buy the one. Massively off topic, but thanks, Stephen Beerman. Gustav Nilang asked a big favourite all time Liverpool 11. I think he did this.
Yeah, we did this on the stat show last week on the website,
which is available on the redmentv.com. Go and watch that right now. But he also says, if you were cookies, what cookie would you be? I think you'd be a Smarties cookie.
I don't think that's right. Why do you think there's little bursts of
exactly. Yeah, I think you've got these little moments of just these moments of flashes of inspiration and colour.
Okay, well, you know, that's a good shout. I think maybe more like an oaten raisin or something like that. Do you know what I mean? From the outside, it looks crispy, it looks hard, but I think when you get into it, they're a bit chewy, aren't they? And they're a little bit soft and stuff like that. But then you still get those because the raisins, they do get a little bit hard. You do have to chew a little bit more and you have to really dig deep for the depth of flavour and stuff. So I think that maybe I'd be an oaten raisin cookie.
Yeah, I got no idea. Whatever's the most sweet and sickening.
White chocolate.
Sure, go ahead. I'll be a white chocolate cookie.
Great answer, Paul.
I know, it's tremendous. How am I doing that? I'm like the fucking. It's like having the Beatles as a support act. Hey everyone, here's our acoustic set after the Beatles have just fucking ended on Twist and Shout. Blaine Egan asked, I didn't quite answer this before on the your favourite Liverpool chants. The Torres one's your
and right now the Live and Burn one.
For me it's still, and it always has been and it always will be, Fields of Anfield Road. There's something about that, because we talk about the best songs build. And they've got to have that thing to them which gives you the moment to get onto what's being sung. Right, you know, and you go, yeah, we're doing this. And there's nothing better. And it's always when it's a good game, we're performing well and we're winning. And that song, when you've got everyone, you just look around and everyone's up clapping and just a sea of people clapping and bouncing and stuff like that. And we're just playing Man United and having the whole of Anfield singing that song is glorious. It's as close to like a spiritual experience when that song gets on. When it's done poorly, it's not very good. But it's that one, you know, it's the best barometer of how well Liverpool are performing and the mood of the fans when that song goes to three verses. When it comes around for the third time around, you know things are amazing at Liverpool Football Club. That's my absolute favourite Liverpool chant. So yeah, in fact we will, let's see if we've got one more that we can go to. We've got a few more questions actually, but we have talked for fucking ages this time around, so we will let people go and get on with their lives in an auditory sense. Those of you who are watching on the redmentv.com, we've got a few more questions we'll be answering exclusively for you. If you do like the podcast and you do like the cut of our jib, the gist of what we do, then you know we do loads and loads of content. The redmentv.com, we do three plus this as well, exclusive shows for the subscribers, which are all around between generally around 45 minutes to an hour long each, and obviously all the free content on the YouTube channel as well. So please do, I implore you, go and check that stuff out. If you're leaving us here and you're on iTunes, make sure you do drop us a review and all that kind of good shit as well. Spread the love.
to write.
Yeah, if you so
that's
if you
a 17 in the charts last
we
week.
We did get
to 17. First week on iTunes.
Yeah,
not bad. In the sports and hobbies section.
I want more. I want more. Tell your friends. Spread the love. So if you're leaving us here on the podcast, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back for more Redmen TV podcast goodness next week.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Walk on, guys. See you later. And for those of you sticking around, let's get stuck back into it.